Bookers, come on down. You have stumbled upon a pot of word salad at the bottom of a sometimes inappropriate rainbow. At the controls are indie authors Cintra Sullivan, Kay Banning Kellum, and David Atherton Cooper. I'd like to say they know what they're doing, however, as the official voiceover guy, I have sworn an oath of fealty. Welcome to the What the Book podcast, where scripts and pants are optional.
Hello, bookers. Welcome to What the Book. This is, of course, Cintra. We've got David and Caleb. Hi, guys.
Hey there. How's it going?
Wonderful.
Hey, hey, hey.
There's Caleb. Excellent. We've got a great action-packed. Well, action-packed. We're going to get mouthy. I swear, this episode's going to get mouthy. It could get a little aggressive. It will fire us up because it's something that relates to all of us. And not just the three of us, but all of us as a writing community. We all encounter this subject. So prepare to get your boxing gloves on. I do believe we may need to call corners at some point. What do you think, Caleb?
Oh, man, I don't know what calling corners means, but yes, it's going to get hot.
Well, it's the ding, ding, ding in the wrestling bell, you know, in the boxing. Sorry, I'm not a sporty person. You know, when they get all up in their grill and they have to go ding, 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 get in your corners. I do it to my kids when they're fighting.
Oh, they call that calling corners. I don't know. You know, I don't watch that much boxing either, so.
There's always one, isn't there? There's always one who doesn't get it.
I'm thinking, is this an Aussie thing? Have I gone, like, down the Aussie rabbit hole somewhere? I don't know. Anyway, so, all right. Caleb, lead us off. Where are we going with this subject?
Well, tonight, folks, we're here to talk about toxic behavior in the writing community, and that is typically found in writing community groups and or hashtags, but mostly the groups, the kind of, you know, closed member you got to apply to get in there. They got them all over the place. They got subreddits. They got Facebook groups. Everybody knows the writing community groups, and what you get in there is a lot of toxic behavior. And it's oftentimes seen in the form of gatekeeping and moral standard bearing and things of that nature, where it's just somebody who usually thinks that their opinion is a little bit more than opinion. They kind of take their opinion to fact, and they are not afraid to launch it at some poor unsuspecting newbie who comes in there and makes the mistake of trying to exist within their orbit.
It is true, and they're everywhere, and they flourish in groups, absolutely, because it's almost like a bit of a pack mentality when you can corner people and they almost get a gang up factor going on, which can be detrimental to writers' egos, to their mental health, and, you know, if you're a newbie author, it can be detrimental to your future career. However, it does also exist in the general time feed too. Unfortunately, David, what do you think?
The joys of social media in particular. Yeah, the fact that there are guys all around the world sat in their mum's basement, unable to get out, and yeah, going spotty and a funny colour because they don't get vitamins, and all they want to do is tear other people to pieces. It's a fact of life. It's cyberbullying, but it's in the writing community, or it hits us too. And you know, certainly, you know, you put something out online and you're kind of nervous, and it's like, oh yeah, will people get it? Will they like it? And then to have some dweeb, you know, some Ralph in a basement somewhere go, oh, this is all shit. No, it happens, but there's no need for it.
I like the imagery you're creating there.
I want to know what
Ralph is. Pardon?
I said, I want to know what a Ralph is.
A Ralph, his name.
Oh, no,
Ralph in his basement.
Yeah. Yeah, well, trolls have names too, and Ralph is a big guy. I mean, Ralph's probably about 25, 26, never been physically intimate with a woman or another guy. Hey, whatever he wants.
Call him Ralph. Cool.
Yeah, Ralph.
I didn't know if that was like some Aussie insult for somebody just like, you know, oh, you stopped being a Ralph. You know, hey, I didn't know.
I do love your Aussie accent that you put it on. I would have put
but I
Ralph
think maybe that can more, be our insult for people.
I would have put Ralph at more like 35 with you know, his stubby shorts on and the wife beater singlet and the Dorito chip stains down the front of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, you know, and that special complexion that comes from eating nothing but Doritos 24/7 and drinking Coke. Absolutely.
We love them.
And don't forget his anime body pillow sitting in the bed, which is pretty much just shreds. It's just shreds from the waist down at this point because he has humped that pillow.
But yes,
but then but no, but yes. Cyber bully book is that's what he looks like in our minds. So when you get cyber bullies, see, it's funny though. I always sit there and think cyber bullies are something that teenagers only encounter. As an adult, I think, it's not cyber bullying. You're an adult, and yet having been now in the writing community for a number of years. They're there. They're adults. It's not just a teenage thing. And you have to be able to, half of me goes, I want to ignore it. You want to ignore a bully. You want to ignore a troll because you don't want to validate them for being the dick knob that they are. However, there's also the other part of me that goes, oh, bitch, please, I am totally going to rip you a new asshole right now. Which way do you go?
Yeah. Well, there's two kind of schools of thought on that. And the thing is, like, in the moment they do, they always kind of make sense in the moment. Now, ignoring is usually the best long-term strategy, absolutely. It doesn't feed into their egos. It doesn't give them the attention that they want. Because you have to understand, when somebody engages in that kind of behavior, they want you to reply. Like, they're not sitting there, they're not going to get freaked out when you respond. That's what they're hoping for. We think to ourselves, like, I could just absolutely roast this piece of shit, you know, into the ground. And sometimes that is like a course of action you can take. Ignoring it, on the other hand, that doesn't really give them what they want. And I think it's when you just kind of have to decide, you know, is the ignoring part working? I think that's when that piece of advice becomes kind of questionable. If ignoring it works, if they eventually just go away and don't come back, then boom, you've done it. But if they just keep going, then you kind of got to ask yourself that age-old question, you know, like if you do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result, you know, that's insanity. So if you ignore them over and over again and you think eventually they're going to go away, that's also insane.
But there's also like how I'm feeling that day. Yeah, if I'm having a kind of grumpy day and I haven't got a lot on and I've got a bit of time on my hands, sure, let's go bait the trolls and give them a virtual slapping around. Let's say, hey guys, grow up, you know, get a life. But it just takes so much effort. And they don't deserve the creativity. They don't appreciate it. Yeah, they just want to be told that we think they're an arsehole so they can respond. And yeah, they don't have the vocabulary. They don't have the mental equipment to do anything other than just descend into name calling and your shit. It's like being in school again. But on a good day, when there's, you know, there's nothing on Netflix, I'm feeling a bit bored, you can get, yeah, dangle the bait and they'll come lurching out from their basements, blinking in the daylight, and you can have fun with them. But you're going to be having fun for hours, so you've got to have some time in your day ready to go baiting, sure.
I normally only bait with Bruce. Bruce hasn't played for a while, so.
You haven't let Bruce out for a while. It has. True.
Bruce hasn't been out for a while, but, you know, that's normally a DM thing with Bruce. He invites him into his DMs, and he likes to play a little rough. But you know, I haven't really had any kinky DMs lately. I'm not sure what I'm doing wrong. But Bruce is feeling neglected. Now the thing is, okay, I did encounter some bullying today. And lucky for this particular bully, I am not PMSing, so I did not engage. Yay for them. Yay for me, I think, honestly, because it always comes back and bites you in the ass long term. Because as Caleb said, if I respond and engage, people don't do something for nothing. You only ever do something, no matter whether it's for good or bad intentions, you only ever do something because there's something that's a payoff, whether it's You know, you buy your friend a bunch of flowers because they're feeling sad. Their payoff for you is that you make them feel better. You know, you this dude decides to spew a heap of shit out on my page. He did it because he wants a payoff. He wants me to engage. He wants me to validate him by going and cursing him out. Meh, I don't really feel like validating the dick today. So I decided to let it go. I breathed my zen fibers and gone, whoo, it's okay.
But if you look at, as an example, this guy's behavior, because you sort of scroll down the chain a little further, this is a pattern.
Oh, yeah.
Whoever this guy is, he's getting triggered by people quite legitimately promoting, you know, their own stuff, your books, other books. People are putting stuff up on the shameless self-promo Saturday, which is fun. And sure, if people are honest enough to tag their stuff with shameless self-promo, then you kind of know that that's what's going on. So for this guy to sort of come out with all this bluster and mock outrage, you know, it's all shit. It's like, oh, dude, get a life.
And that is your standard. We talk about the writing community specifically, because if we go into, I wrote an article. If you guys ever want to read it, I will be happy to fucking link it out. I did a huge article on adult bullying and how it's still a problem, like in the workplace and things like that. And I also touched on bullying whole. Yeah, I mean, it's a real problem. It's something that I do take a stand against. I'm going to touch on something with that too. But this is, he is trying to go through that kind of gatekeeping, passive aggressive sort of, you know, bullying method, where it's like, if you say anything back, they're going to nail you on your ability to, they're going to nail you on your ability to take criticism and things like that. And say, oh, you know, well, we can see that you clearly can't take criticism, so how can you call yourself? That's one of their oldest, you know, go-tos on that. When in reality, this is not criticism. This is just spewing of bullshit opinion. There's nothing actionable about this. There's nothing that would help. If this person truly believed that Centra needed help as an author, and that was their purpose for doing this, then they would put actionable steps in there. But no, they try to go with that entire gatekeeping. This is gatekeeping in its oldest form, because they point out the fact that, well, they call it vanity publications. It's not. I mean, you know, vanity publication would be, you know, one of those ready-made joints. Then they go into, they try to use all the big words, twaddle. I would roast them just for using the word twaddle in a non-ironic sense there. And
least go with poppycock. I mean, don't just go with the old stuff.
Twaddle. I love it.
And then, so, yeah, I mean, this...
Go on.
Oh, go ahead, Tim. I was saying, like, this is just that kind of beta trap that writers fall into quite a bit, where, you know, they just completely go after your integrity as an author, your skill set and everything else. And then if you come back and say anything at all, then they go after your ability to take criticism. It is just one of those things where the game is rigged. They've already got the next response prepared. Now, I have a method for dealing with that, but we'll save that for later. The point I wanted to make, though, when I tied into the anti-bullying advocacy that I do, is one of the big things that is oftentimes thrown at us is, you know, well, you know, how can you say that, you know, how can you preach tolerance, but you don't tolerate this kind of behavior, right? And this is the truth about that. You don't have to tolerate toxic shit like this. Being tolerant does not mean that you tolerate intolerance, if you know what I mean. Like, you absolutely have the right to draw the line and say, shut the fuck up, sit the fuck down. And they will come back and be like, oh, well, now you're being the bully. No, no, I'm not. Now I'm being the voice telling you to sit the fuck down. Because that is what defeats bullying, is when people stand up to it.
Yes.
And say, we don't want that in our space. Get the fuck out of here. And so, yes, it is okay to stand up and to be an ass sometimes. To people who do this kind of stuff.
Well, it's like being back at school. You know, the bullies come around beating kids up for their pocket money or whatever it is. And even if you get a smack in the mouth, you stand up and take a stand and go, no, fuck off. Then, yep, sure, you get bluster and flamed, and then they don't come back because they want easy pickings. They want They want to feel good about themselves and they're right. Nobody else can be. And as soon as you stand up and go, actually, I disagree with you, they don't want to hear it anymore.
Now, if this particular guy, I think that you also have to know who you're dealing with. Now, if a patrol comes after me and I sincerely disagree with what, then they come to me with, you know, aggression and belittlement and whatever. I have no problem with standing up. I have the confidence enough to go, you know what, fuck off. I got no time for you. Or, you know, is that the best you can do? Or whatever. If I'm in the mood to debate, let's go for it. However, this particular case, I know this guy, not personally, just know of him. He has multiple accounts. He has a multiple trolling issue. He has multiple authors that I do know that have encountered with this guy. So when he popped up on my feed, half of me went, ooh, I've made it now because, you know, one of the biggest trolls in the Twitter community sees me. And I go, ooh, look at that.
Take it as an accolade.
The other half goes, eh. I've seen all your dribble before on everybody else's accounts because he's a constant troller. So, whatever. Okay, leave him be. You know, go play with yourself in your own basement. I don't have time for you. So I think advice would be for people to know who you're also, you know, coming up against. Because, you know, you should stand up against bullying. Absolutely. But there's a difference between bullying and just some knob in a basement putting out bait, hoping somebody will friggin' bite it.
And you can generally find that, you know, grab hold of their profile on whatever platform they're trolling on and just look back through the history of their comments. You'll see really quickly a pattern develops. And if, you know, if they are going after, we'll go back to the, shameless self-promo, if they're going after particular hashtags, it stands out like tits on a bull. You can see him a mile away, but you have to go look.
Well, he's not and going after me specifically. He's going after anybody. He doesn't care. So it's not personal. If you're going to bully me, make it personal. Come after me and I will stand up and I will stand my ground and I will die on the hill that you attack me on. Absolutely. But
for the first time you get one of these, it feels really, it's gut-wrenching. The first time you get hit with one of these, it's like, oh, yeah, your world collapses and it feels like a personal attack until you go look at the profile and find that, no, they're doing this to everyone. Bad news, you ain't special. This is just a dweeb.
Hey, David, is this the same guy that a while back they did that, shit, oh my god, what was it? It was some kind of hashtag that was based off of it was basically like shamelessly promoting your stuff. Centra, do you remember that hashtag? It was about a year ago, and I can't remember what it was called now. But it was basically like coming out and saying, yeah, it's okay to just promote the crap out of yourself and just fucking love your fucking shit and be like, yeah, buy my crap. God, I can't remember the name of that hashtag.
I can't remember, but we shouldn't find shame in promoting our work.
No, not at all. My point is there was one guy that was going around just like freaking, like just going after everybody involved in that hashtag. They just made it their whole thing to just stalk that hashtag and just harass everybody that was, you know, promoting their stuff. And I was trying to think if this was that same person or not.
See, this was like, it probably was because he's an idiot. The thing is that, you know, we're talking about gatekeepers and we're talking about, you know, the moral bearers of their own standard, rule humpers, etc. Now, the thing is, you wrote a book, fucking brilliant. You should be able to promote it without shame. And if somebody, I see those messages go up, you know, that go, oh God, I'm unfollowing you because you promote your own work. Okay, great. Unfollow me because fuck, exactly. I made a book. I wrote a book. I'm going to promote my book. You know, there's no magical sales fairy that just drops the dollars into my account. I have to actually market myself.
Yeah, it's different if they're jumping in your DMs going, hey, thanks for the follow. Here's a link, buy my book. That's a different thing. But when it's public and it's open and someone's just broadcasting to the world, hey, I wrote a book. You guys might like to read it. Here's a link. That's don't go tearing those down because that's just basic marketing and promotion. Everyone does that.
Yeah, and These are the same people that will tell you if you show up in one of these writer groups and say, hey, how can I, you know, how can I help my book get sold? How can I, you know, get bigger numbers? How can I get my work out there? They're the ones that will tell you, promote, promote, promote. Don't be afraid to promote. And then when you do it, they're the same ones that will sit there and say, you know, stop spamming your links. And it's like, well, holy shit, what are you, you know, where are we going here? Yeah, I think it's...
Where's the quota? Where's the line?
The line is whatever they want. And that's the problem with gatekeepers is the line is exactly where their subjectivity says for it to go.
Yeah, it's where they think it should be drawn, no matter who else.
Exactly, because, you know, they're the same ones that will tear into new people. And I'm referencing things that I see on some of the Facebook writers groups. You know, new guy shows up and says, you know, and puts that the typical, you know, a, how can I write my book better or whatever type, really, really super vague, nobody can really answer it kind of question, but whatever, you know. And then they're the ones that will show up in there and say, you need to learn how to be more specific. This doesn't help anything. This doesn't get you anywhere. If you want to be a writer, you need to learn how to form a question. And then, now keep in mind, that same person that posts that, if another user shows up and says something along the lines of, you know, this group is broken down into just a lot of people asking questions that could easily be Googled and things like that, you know, maybe we should try and find a way to better communicate what, you know, how we say it. Then the same person that roasts the last guy will step into this person's thread and, you know, be like, well, how dare you sit there and determine what somebody can or can't ask? It's perfectly fine to say what you want to say. And they're just all there. They're contrarians is really what they are. At the heart. They have to disagree somehow, even in the most just arbitrary of statements. They have to be the ones that come in and have some kind of counter opinion. And I call it a counter opinion, not a counterpoint, because it's never followed with anything besides just their opinion. And
it just sounds like really you should kind of pity these people, because it just feels like attention seeking behavior. And if you're that desperate for attention that you have to just try and lay into everyone you see because they for some reason don't play your game and don't do work the way you want to work, well, come on, grow up a little, guys.
Well, I think one thing I kind of like us to go over and kind of roll into this is kind of to look for the different types, like what are the different types of, you know, gatekeeping, cyberbullying, the kind of things that you will encounter that is not obvious. It's not like the hey fuck you type of post, not like the stuff Center you're talking about. It's more of that extremely passive aggressive type thing. There's a few methods that are real common that I'd like to talk about, just that when people see it, they kind of know what they're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, the one that gets me is the ones who sort of step up and assume that they are a moderator. So fine, if you're on a bulletin board in a group somewhere, sure, there'll be a moderator looking after it and checking on the tone. But, you know, hashtags on Twitter are not moderated, and yet you will get people who will jump in going, well, this isn't an appropriate conversation for this hashtag. And okay. So they're immediately appointing themselves as the sort of moral arbiter for whatever that conversation is all about. Those get on my nerves.
And I haven't seen too much of that in the writing community hashtag. And that's sort of main.
I like the ones that, I guess they're rule humpers when they come to. I especially get a lot of flack when I reference pantsing versus
plotting,
yes. And there was one a few weeks ago that simply told me that I can't write like that. There is no way that pantsing exists in this world. We're all plotters and I lie. I'm not. Oh, okay. Because this particular author, had never communicated with their character. And then in his view, nobody could do it if he couldn't do it. So that simply didn't exist. And that was his rule, that everybody plotted. Anybody who didn't plot was simply lying that they weren't plotting, because plotting is the only way that you can write. Dead set rule, done, sealed,
for him, maybe. But then how accuse someone else of lying because they actually have a different way of doing what they do? Isn't that part of what the writing community is all about? We're all sharing how we do our stuff and how we see the world. And everyone else's point is just as valid as ours on how they see the world.
Well, I guess that's what the writing community is supposed to be about. But what it's supposed to be about, as opposed to what some of the undercurrents can be there that can drag you down, it might not be quite so fun.
I feel like the guy you were talking about, the Plotter Pantser guy, probably he seems like that over-analytical type who, yeah, I mean, if you were to break down plotting and break down pantsing, they're going to share styles with each other no matter what. I do believe it's impossible. If you were to break down every aspect, every nuance, every second of, creative gathering that goes into anything, you're going to use elements of both to some extent. And it also depends on what your definition of it is. Does plotting have to use an outline? Or if you plot in your head, things like that. Usually I know what I establish at least like a beginning and a middle and kind of maybe not the end, but an ending desired sort of effect. Is that plotting? You know, and I think some people tend to over, just analyze stuff like that. And they get so obnoxious about it. I mean, look, I've already told you guys, I hate the word pantser. It sounds so goddamn stupid. But I would not sit there and tell somebody that it does not exist. I think both styles. It's probably all some form of hybrid based on a min-max ratio.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, go back to the author interview we did a couple of weeks ago with Scott Roche, and he was talking about the snowflake method. To me, that's a form of plotting, but to someone else, it might, because it's non-linear, they might sit there and go, well, he's still flying by the seat of his pants, he's a panster. And it's like, okay, but we all have a way of doing these things. I have to say, I have a fondness for the word panster because I kind of do it sometimes and kind of don't. So, as a genetic plotter who sits and actually outlines all his stuff before he writes it, I quite like the idea that other people have got their pants hanging out. It's good.
Well, I don't mind it as much as you say it, David, because you like put emphasis on the T, and that's kind of funny, like pantster. See, I can deal with that for some reason, but pantser, the way we say it, where it's more of a, a sliding down T plus Z kind of combo there, it just bugs me. But pantster, I like the fact that you really enunciate that T. That kind of helps me digest it. I'm going to try to just remember that next time I read the word. I'm just going to try to read it like in your voice.
Well, it's the British upbringing. It's just proper. I
was going to say, it's the British twang.
Absolutely. Look, I'm just here to try and improve you people. And go with
Marty,
it.
He said,
I can't. Head, sir.
I've already heard you use the term vitamin tonight. All right. I didn't say anything about that. Okay. So.
Oh, of course. Well, you don't have vitamins over there, do you? I think you have things you call vitamins.
Vitamins.
Very strange idea. But,
you call it vitality? Do you call it
vitality?
Look, no one said we had to make sense. We just set the rules. Vitality, vitamins. There's no problem there at all. That's just how it is. And don't ask about scones and scones. Let's just not go there.
Oh, gosh. Now, there was one thing that I wanted to touch on with this. I want to know what you guys feel about it. And it's a toxic behavior, but it's not really blatant. It's quite passive-aggressive toxic behavior in the writing community. Now, this is in general feed writing community, specifically in Twitter. I'm not sure I've seen it so much in the Facebook groups. I haven't seen it on the gram either, but definitely in the Twitter community main feed. Now, the passive-aggressive feeling of writer's lips. Now, when you get tagged in writer's lists and those sorts of games, the pressure you feel to have to continue them. You have to go and tag another 10 or another 20 or another whatever. Yeah, but there's a passive aggressive pressure to it as an author to feel part of the writing community. You must participate in these writer's lists.
I never thought that.
And I've seen...
I used to feel when I first started out on Twitter and caught up with the writing community and found this amazing group of people, I got sucked into the Follow Fridays and the Writers Lift. And there, yeah, I can understand that feeling of, oh, I must tag 10 friends. And then gradually my friends went, "Guy, yeah, don't do this. We're good. You don't need to keep tagging us."
Yeah, because not everybody
pulled me back away from it.
Yeah, because not everybody likes to get tagged. I mean, I'm not sure how many people really love to get tagged in them. And I never say that because I much prefer people to be like, "Yeah, let me add Caleb in with this." I wouldn't want people to be like, "Oh no, he doesn't." Because look, getting my name out there is getting my name out there. I ain't got no problem with that. But I could see how some people, you know, when you get up and you look at it, you've got 42 notifications and you go, "Oh my God, am I fucking viral?" And no, it's a writer's list.
but I do, like you, I get the warm and fuzzies when people tag me on stuff. It's great. I won't often join in and tag everyone else that I know, but it's a nice thing. 29, 30, 40 notifications just means, hey, I've been slack and I've been off Twitter for 10 minutes and, oh crap, gotta catch up.
So, Sintra, I got a question for you because you're like the Twitter mistress. Yeah. Explain what a shadow ban is and how writers' lifts and mass tags and follow lifts can cause them. And how does somebody tell if they are shadow banned? I don't know if you know or not.
I've heard the term shadow banned, and I actually don't know what the fuck they're talking about. You'd have to explain what shadow banned
is. It's when Twitter limits the visibility of your tweets to avoid.
Okay, I don't know.
Right.
The term.
So I heard that writer lifts. I've heard that writer lifts can trigger it because they do that, I guess, to keep the fucking the system from getting gunked. But then I hear that it doesn't just go away as soon as as soon as you're no longer actively participating in the lift or whatever, and that it can affect how, other people see your account. I heard it can really mess up your visibility, and that's why, but I've tried to Google it and I can't find any like really easy to goddamn understand definition of it.
Okay. So I heard the word shadow banned the other day and I thought, what the fuck is that? Cause it just sounds like something out of a paranormal movie to me. To me, that's Twitter jail. You go into Twitter jail.
That's what they call it, too. Yeah. And I see, when I used to hear Twitter jail, I thought that meant you got...
Yeah, and it depends
on... I used to think that meant you got blocked by Twitter for, like, that you got your account disabled for a little while or something like that.
No, you can just be limited. It can be limited. You could have your likes limited. You could have comments limited. You could have the whole thing disabled for, a day or two.
But there's no way to tell if you are. That's the scary thing about it, I think, is that when you go... There's no way to, like, look on your account and see if you are... shadow blocked or whatever.
You can if you get put in full Twitter jail, you can't get on fucking
I'm talking about when they're just like,
if you're on a restricting factor, you can't tell. Writer's lifts and Follow Fridays, excessive tag games, anything like that can be detrimental to your algorithms, absolutely, because Twitter doesn't want it jammed up with a heap of shit. Okay, it's a social media, we get this, and in theory this is what social media is about, is having fun and playing games and getting your name out there. I get that, but Twitter has its rules, its parameters, and filling it full of tag after tag after tag is not something that it wants. So it will reduce your algorithm movements. It will reduce your visibility if you participate. It's in the rules. It was brought up earlier in the year that the rules were all very clear that Follow Fridays were being targeted and Writers' Lifts were being targeted.
Well, we'll discuss this.
I don't participate a lot in them. I appreciate everybody who tags me. Absolutely love your little cotton white socks, but I don't tend to participate too much because it's a pure fear. I don't need my visibility restricted.
And they do.
And as you said, you don't see it happening. You don't get told, "Hey, we're doing this because you did this." They just do it, and you don't know.
Supposedly there's a way you can kind of check, and that's if you make an alternate account and follow yourself and follow yourself back from the other one. And then if you log back into your main and you tweet something, you go back onto that alt and see if you see your tweet on the timeline. And they say that's one way you can kind of see if you are shadow banned. If you don't see your own thing, then yeah, you're shadow banned.
Wow. It's so complicated.
Well, yeah, it does work.
I could just DM somebody and go, can you see my shit?
Yeah, can anybody see my account?
Yeah.
Anyway.
And you'd have to do it through a DM.
Not getting shadow banned. Maybe we'll do the dangers of the writer's lift. We'll talk about that or not. But I wanted to talk about some of these like passive-aggressive techniques, though, when it comes to the cyberbullying and the gatekeeping, that are by design intended to not immediately look like either. And it's a good thing that there are, smarties like me running around that can kind of catch it. And I'm going to name a few of these, and I want you guys to tell me if you've come across them and you would immediately see this as problematic, or if you would think that this is just normal. So one of them is like the all assuming, and that's the one that starts out stating an opinion as a majority fact, but not in an aggressive way, but like in kind of a friendly way. So they'll be like, those are the ones that'll open up with something like, so everybody knows that as writers, we read all the time. We're always reading. We love to read. What do you guys do when you find a writer who says they don't like reading? Now, do you spot the trap?
It depends on what mood I'm in as to whether I engage with stuff like that. With the broad spectrum passive aggressive comments, I if I'm in the mood, I'll caution them about, you know, the quote unquote what they said or what everybody says. It rarely is exactly, you know, what everybody says. It's like my teenager saying, hey, mum, everybody owns an iPhone. I need one. Yeah, you show me one of your friends that have got an iPhone, girlfriend. We're going to have one then. You know?
It's definitely part of that. But engaging with someone who sounds like they're positive, but they're definitely expressing an opinion. Yeah, you read that and it's like, oh, great. So if I haven't read 5 new books this weekend, I'm a failure and I'm not a writer. Bullshit. But I've seen people do it. I don't tend not to join in just because I think I would just get too annoyed with them. They're not worth engaging with. But people tend to jump on the bandwagon with those.
Well, yeah, and that's the whole purpose, because one, it is the way it works is that it states something in a soft assumption, you know, and that's a manipulative technique. You know, it's like when you're trying to get money from somebody. Like, hey, man, I know you got a couple of bucks on you, man. I know you make a lot of money. I know you got good money. I know you got a couple of dollars. Can you help me out? I just need a dollar, man. You know, and you build them up first. You create this narrative of, well, yeah, you got money. And then it comes to the whole, like, and I know you're generous. And I know, you know, you make good pay. So surely you would find. It's kind of like the oldest trick in the book where people will go up and be like, well, I know you're a good person. So you can't think that way. As though they're suddenly, like, making you feel guilty about your own feelings. And, you know, I feel like it kind of falls into that school. It's definitely conditions a tone, and it conditions an inclusive tone to where, you know, people can go in there and be like, yeah, I'm a writer. I read, you know, because they're literally saying as writers, you should be reading. Anyone who disrupts that tone, you know, then they can sit there and say, well, you know, how can you call yourself? It's a simple trap, you know, and I don't even think they do it to bait in people to say, no, that's not 100% right. I think they just do it because it's a safe way for them to sound smart, to sound like they got their finger on the pulse of it, and they kind of get a bunch of folks run there and go, yep, I totally agree with you. You're great. And I usually just find the best way to deal with that, if I'm in the mood to, you know, be feisty, is, you know, just use like a disruptive type argument, not to go in there and be like, you're wrong, you're a fucking idiot, eat shit. But more of a just softly allow a fork to form in the road with a disruptive comment to it, such as, you know, so what if somebody is, you know, what if somebody is visually disabled? Like, are you saying that they can't be a writer now because they're not, you know, things like that? Or there's that one quote from that one author that said, you know, like, I'm the only guy I know that's written more than I've read or something like that. You can throw that in there. There's all kind of ways to do it. It's more about just kind of saying, I see you. And sometimes that's one of the easiest ways to kind of defeat that toxic behavior is just when they do it. It's just kind of politely saying, I see what you're doing, and it's bullshit, you know? And
yeah, you can go after that assertion that, as everybody knows, and that's the easy one to take on, because you don't take on the person who's making the statement. You just question the, really, everybody? What about? And like you say, it puts the fork in the road and allows that to just move forward.
And as an author, personally, talking from a personal point of view, right, you know, having, 15 books out, 4 coming out, something or whatever, it doesn't matter. But having a number of books out already, I have a proven success. I have a proven stability within the writing community and within my own career, okay? So when this only happened today, yesterday, I saw somebody do that exact thing, Caleb, who put out there that you must read while you're writing to keep your head in the game. And I went, I don't know. Personally, I don't read while I'm writing. I read in between books because my characters really don't like me interrupting their flow with somebody else's flow. So, you know, and I put that down there as I was a little passive aggressive with it, but I wasn't trying to create an argument. I was just putting a, not everybody does it, so whatever.
Right. And I think it's important that, you know, people, when they try to push in a very heavily opinion-driven narrative, they do need to get that pushback. They absolutely need to see that pushback, because that's the only way that, you know, the message, maybe it never gets to them, but it definitely becomes visible to others in the community, is that, you know, yes, you want to be that kind of dick, you know, there's not, it's not just going to be a free ride. You know, somebody has to step up there and challenge you. And then you kind of first go from there. Another one that is very popular is the, I'm trying to remember how this one went. Oh my God, I've seen it and it's terrible. Okay, here's one. It's kind of passive aggressive. I don't know if it's meant so much to cyberbully or even to be overtly toxic, but it's still a little bit problematic. Is come out there and they'll be like, so what is your current, you know, what is your current MC in your whip doing this weekend? Or, you know, and I'm always like, well, what is this assumption that I have a current MC or a current whip? You know, it's like, wouldn't a better icebreaker maybe be like, you know, hey, if you guys are working on something, you know, and it kind of just preaches that all like that assuming behavior, or I don't know, it's really just kind of more problematic than toxic. But
it's an interesting one for me, because we see it a lot, and it's kind of hard to work out what the motivation is behind it, because I quite like those. They come around. It's just like, what's your, if there's a version of it which is like, if your MC was at a party, what would they do?
Oh, the hypothetical MC.
Yeah. Which I find less intrusive, and that actually makes me think a little more about the character and how would they react. Whereas the one about what are you doing this weekend, which kind of implies that if you've not written something about your main character this weekend, then you're a failure. I mean, that's the subtext behind it, and that I don't like.
Are the ones that say like, how many words have you written today? Those kind.
Yeah.
I used to do it, boys. I used to do it. At the start, I used to sit there and go, I wrote, you know, 7,000 words today. Yay me, what did you write? And I did it for a little while. And then I thought, I sound like I'm an arrogant dickhead.
Yours isn't that bad. That style that you just described is actually like the more desirable style of it, because you're opening up with your accomplishment and then you're inviting other people to celebrate along with theirs.
But then I had people say to me I was putting unrealistic pressure on other writers to match me, and I'm like, well, I really wasn't.
Said, no, it's unrealistic to just match me in general, because it's never going to fucking happen. But but no,
this is the hang-up I had, a real hang-up to begin with, about the NaNoWriMo crowd. Because it started, look at me, I'm awesome. Look how many words I've done. Oh, aren't I fabulous? And then I sort of thought about it, and it's working for them. And so I actually sort of turned it around and went, actually, if you can do that and that's working for you, that's brilliant. More power to you. So yeah. I changed, because originally I was thinking, oh, for fuck's sake, you know, these guys are just bragging about how wonderful they are. And, you know, pity them because their egos are so shallow. But it did turn it around. And I kind of like to hear that people are doing this stuff and they're getting their books written. And so I've kind of done a 180 on that one.
Look, I did NaNoWriMo for about 3 years and I've not met... I will phrase that differently. I've met some of the most toxic people in the NaNoWriMo community. I'm sorry, people, but... Shit, the amount of pressure that is put on you in the NaNoWriMo community is insane. If you can handle that pressure, you can get that book done, or you can get that 50,000 word quota done. That's great, no problem. But if you happen to miss a day or a couple days, or shit happens in your life and suddenly you're thrown off schedule, the downward spiral of your mental health can be really, really detrimental. So so much pressure.
Well, that's why I wouldn't even update. I attempted NaNo, and the most I wrote was however many fucking words were in my bio. That's what I accomplished. But if I were going to do NaNo, I would not update as I went. I would do the 50,000 thing, you know, I'd make the manuscript on Word or whatever, and then I would dump it all at once and be like, done. Because, yeah, I don't want to hear that shit, you know, well, you didn't write today. No, fuck you. But I mean, the thing that what you described, though, and even what you described, David, like Centra's, you know, I wrote 7,000. David, you know, talking about the people, talking about their words. See, I don't have a problem with bragging now, because I think toxicity is found more in trying to impose into others than just trying to elevate yourself. So even with Centra saying I wrote 7,000 words. Cool, because one, now at least the comment makes sense. Now when she says, how many words have you written today, at least there's a context to it. It to me, it just pop up and they're just like, you know, hey, it's 8 a.m. Why aren't you writing yet? Or, you know, how many words have you gotten done today? How many are you going to get done today? What excuses are you going to make to not write yet? Shit like that, it's like, why the fuck are you in my goddamn business, person? But...
I think they're trying, that one especially, I can see them coming from a motivational sense, but at 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm sitting there going, I'm just fucking having a cup of coffee, man. I'm caffeinating. I cannot think at this time in the morning. It doesn't work like that. And, you know, you get a little agitated by it and the pressure. Well,
but then I move away from the pressure because, you know, we live in the lucky country. We are however many hours ahead of the US. And so everyone going, hey, it's Sunday morning, guys. And I'm like, yeah, it's Sunday. Get over yourselves. It's fine. That gives me permission to slack. And that's fantastic. I can feel good about my pitiful word count because, hey, everyone else is keen and they're gonna do their thing. Loving it.
Well, you know, like I said, I mean, it's one of those kind of concepts where toxicity does not always carry intent. Sometimes toxic behavior is toxic just because it's permitted or it's ignored or it's whatever. Negligence is a big part of determining it too, not just intent behind it. So, yeah, I mean, and I don't know. And then you get into, like, you got the humble braggers, which is a whole nother fucking couple terms. I don't know if that's more –
yes.
I don't know if that is toxic or just pathetic. But, you know, you
it's
see the
probably not toxic, but it tastes nasty. You'd spit it out.
Yeah, you see the ones that are just like, there's one guy, oh my God, I had to fight the urge not be a dickhead to this guy. But he posted some dumb shit like, I don't know, he said something like, IQs are overrated. You know, I have 155 and I'm a dumbass. It's like, dude, fucking humble bragging. God, it's so cringy. That's the problem. Like, did you really have to contrive all that fucking bullshit to just because you just want people to see you type, I've got a 155 IQ?
And if he has got 155 IQ, why is he trying so hard?
I debate
why can't
it.
He come up with something smarter as a way to do it? No.
Don't, like I always tell people, don't humble brag. I mean, if you, bragging is one thing. Bragging is, you know, as long as you're not making claims that your ass can't cash, right? You know, then I say brag. You just can't get mad when people don't fucking, you know, if you say, hey, I just wrote the greatest fucking novel in the world, you know, you guys come and buy it. And when nobody comes and buys it, you don't get to get mad, you know, and be like,
fair enough.
No.
As long as you can fucking own your words, like they stand up and be counted and whatnot, then that's fine. As long as it's not imposing on anybody else's self-esteem. If I want to stand on my own laurels and brag, and I'm not dragging anyone else down to boost myself up, then fucking yeah, I'll do it. Why the hell not?
Yeah, big yourself up, but not at the expense of others.
Exactly. That's the whole thing. You know, you can lift yourself all the way up to goddamn the rings of Saturn if you want to, so long as you're not standing on anybody's fucking head in the process.
And we learn as we go. I had a lady DM me and said, can you retweet my pinned post? And I went, sweetheart, I don't know you. And she went, yeah, we're friends. I go, oh, yeah, no. I realized that I followed you like 5 minutes ago. Because you followed me, and I thought, hey, you're a writer, let's, you know, whatever. But the first DM to me should not be, can you retweet my pinned post? The first interaction you should be coming to me with is on my main feed, and it should just be interacting with the community. So I gave her a little bit of advice about interaction will breed support will breed retweets, and that's how you get your name seen, that's how you get your work seen, is interacting. And the thing is, so I was really sweet about it.
You're a sweetheart.
I'm a sweet person. Let me be honest. I know. Now, I was really sweet about it. She did caught me on a non-PMS day. So kudos to her too. And this woman, to her credit, went and has been actively participating in the writing community. So guess what? I went and retweeted her pinned post because she did. She took advice and went, oh gosh, yes, no, I see what you mean, I should be doing that. Yeah I should, because that's how the community should work. It shouldn't be an entitlement of you do what I tell you to do because, you know, you're a big person with a lot of followers, so you have to retweet my work. Fucking don't.
The community includes a whole spectrum of people, and there are people who sit on the outskirts and just watch and vicariously enjoy. There are those who are active and dynamic and getting in there, and everything in between. But to reach out to someone just because they've got a gazillion followers and go, even politely, hey, please, would you, if you're at the non-participatory end of the spectrum, then don't expect anyone to pick up and do it. I wouldn't reach out to someone just to say, can you give me a hand here, if I hadn't put something in.
It's about familiarity. Yeah. It's, you know, it's about, you know, have we chatted? Have we ever talked before? You know, because, I agree. If the very first thing you come to me privately with is an unsolicited request, not, hey, how you doing? Not, you know, hey, I love your work, or hey, no, just straight up like, you know, can you do something for me? Yeah, that's a bad, you know, that's a bad taste, especially if it doesn't even come with some sort of like incentive afterward. Like, you know, would you
it's the writer equivalent of a dick pic, surely.
But yeah, my thing is like this, if you're going to ask, and there's nothing wrong with asking for favors and networking is a huge part of what a community is. Mm-hmm. But there is a style to it. You should never go in and just ask for something blindly unsolicited. And honestly, if you're asking someone to do you a favor, you should state some sort of incentivizing. It doesn't have to be like, well, I'll give you this or doing it. But, you know, the language should at least read, you know, I will be appreciative. And if there's anything I can do for you down the line, help.
Look, I just ask for basic interaction before you deep throat me. That's all. That's all. It's very simple.
Throat.
Fuck.
Makes you notes. Know? Okay. Yep.
All right. I think we've got to the end of our toxic behavior. Because guess what? I am super excited. We've got David back because Caleb, you want to introduce us? Where are we going? Okay,
well, we are back. David is back. So that means that he can be joined by the other four Impractical Jokers, and we can roll right on back into Broken, an Impractical Joker story.
Broken Chapter 2.
Now let's catch up the bookers. Where were we when we left the end of chapter one? Now Joe was
getting dragged out. He was bleeding onto his new shoes and being dragged out to a car because they could not wait for the ambulance. They said, "Fuck it, we're going to take Joe down there in the Joker mobile," and they're getting him out. This is after the prank.
So that was the end of chapter two, and we're going to read chapter... No, sorry, that was the end of chapter one, and we're going to read chapter two now.
Chapter two.
All righty. And David, since you're back, since this is your welcome back party, why don't you go ahead and start us off?
Well, as gently as possible, QE's Joe into the back seat of the car. Murr, who had already gotten in through the other door, gently pulled his best friend and former roommate onto the seat with him, resting his head on Sal's coat. Joe, at this point, had lost the energy to scream, but Murr could still see the pain in the blue eyes and hear the agony in every weak whimper. "It's going to be okay, Joey. It's going to be okay." He tried his best to speak calmly to his friend, but knew the fear had to be coming through his voice. The lack of the now almost constant whimpering caused Murr to take his hands from the shoulders he was caressing to look at Joe's face. Okay. I read that kind of different. Joe, wake up, man. Wake him up. Sal was reaching over the seat and shaking Joe by the shoulders. Go, Zintra.
It just sounded so romantic then when you were reading that. Murr grabbed his friend by the chin and shook gently. Shit, I can't get on the interstate. Q made it to out of the parking lot at breakneck speed, but traffic was not allowing him to enter the interstate. Just wake up, Murr. Do whatever you have to do. Blue eyes fluttered. He's awake, guys. Joey, thank God. Try not to close your eyes, buddy, okay? Sal almost screamed from the front seat. Joe, you have to stay awake. Do you hear me? A vacant, non-understanding stare met Murr's worried one. Oh, thank God.
Sal climbed over the seat, motioning Murr to take his place in the front seat, giving him a reassuring pat on the back during the exchange. He knew Murr would never raise his voice or become rough with Joe, and he felt that it was going to be what he needed to keep the friends awake. Placing his hands behind Joe's back, Sal gently lifted the nearly limp body into a sitting position. Okay, the grammar is kind of breaking down. Intending to slightly jostle the broken bones, thus cause pain, he immediately felt guilty, but he knew he had to do it. This roused his friend into a more conscious state. Confusion was still evident, but the agonizing gaze Sal received was more lucid than before. "Sal, what you doing? It hurt. It hurt." The voice was weak, and the small plaintive whimper afterwards split Sal's heart in pieces, but the relief he felt was immense. "So sorry, Joey. I'm so sorry. But listen to me. You broke your lower leg and your foot. It is bad. And you have lost too much blood for you to go to sleep. Do you understand me, David?"
Instead of hearing an answer, he felt his friend's head nod against his chest. "No, Joe, don't nod. I want you to talk to me." "I understand. I'm tired, Sal, please." Having finally entered the interstate, Q had allowed himself to relax slightly. "We'll be there in about 5 minutes, guys. How's he doing, Sal? Don't let him close his eyes again, man." He's awake, but barely. "Please hurry. I'm trying. Just don't let him go to sleep. Joe, talk to us. Talk to us, Joey. Don't you dare close those eyes again, you hard-headed bastard. Listen to me." Q almost screamed at his friend, purposefully making his voice cruel to try and get Joe's attention. Guilt overcame him immediately. The weak voice in the back seat did not help ease his guilt. "It hurts, Q. It hurts, and I'm so tired." "No, Joe, I don't want to hear that. You stay awake. Talk to me. What hurts, buddy?" He noted Joe's voice becoming yet weaker and winded. My right leg, my stomach, I can't breathe. Your stomach, Sal? What? Sal had lifted Joe's shirt and answered before the question was finished. Mer had settled a bit, but was now again petrified for his best friend, only able to watch from his seat. Go, Zintra.
I'm looking. I don't see anything. Sal gently ran his hand up and down his friend's torso, stopping suddenly when Joe let out a deep groan of pain, only to push slightly harder, eliciting a whimper. He could feel Joe's fingers wrapping around his shirt. It's okay, Joe. I just had to feel for a second. I feel it. Cute. There's ribs broke in there. Oh, my God, I've set him up. We've carried him to the car. What if we punctured a lung? Shit, I know, but we had to do it. Is there any blood coming out his mouth? How labored is his breathing?
And that's a short chapter, but that's it for this week.
Mm-hmm.
It is a short chapter. Now, did you notice? And I don't know if this was intentional, but David had a slight, almost southern twang going on. I felt like I'd entered, Gone with the Wind at some point.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Just like, oh, we
hit it. Well, you guys are so good at doing American accents, and we're so terrible at doing Australian accents. I didn't know Nicole Kidman was Australian until I like saw her on an interview. This was a year.
She isn't.
Well, yes, where she is she? Yes, she is.
No, she was born in Hawaii.
Nicole Kidman's Australian.
Tom Cruise's ex-wife.
She was born in
Hawaii. She may have been born there, but she didn't grow up there. Are you sure you're talking?
No, she moved to Australia. I think she was about one, something like that, so when they moved to Australia. But she was born in
okay.
Technicalities. She's Australian. Yeah, she just was born somewhere else.
The point I was making is that she disguised the accent so well in her movie roles that, I think I was probably about 15 years old when I finally saw her like on an interview with, one of the talk shows. And I'm just like, oh, she's Australian?
Oh yeah, if you hear her speaking with her family, it's like, "Hey, you staring?" She, yeah, it's bogan as all get out. That's how it is.
Oh God, I remember her in BMX Bandits. God, that fiery red hair, the flock. I had hair exactly like that. If anybody's seen BMX Bandits, go look it up. It's an Aussie flick. Her hair was my hair growing up.
The decade that taste forgot. And I'm a child of the 80s. No. I'm there. I speak from experience. Bitter pain.
The leg warmers.
The rolled up sleeves on the jacket. The piano keys down the tie. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I am that old.
Let me get Charles' opinion on something like this now. See, I was born in 79. All right. During the 80s, I was mostly a little kid. Like, I mean, up until at least 85, I was just some little kid running around like in fucking pajamas. And I didn't have any style, right? I wasn't developing any kind of style that would have gone along with the era. You know, I started getting to my music and my clothes and my all that stuff in the 90s, you know. So would I call myself a child of the 90s or a child of the 80s? I always kind of get mixed up on that because the 80s didn't...
Do you relate better to, like, when you're talking fashion, music, whatever else? Which one do you relate to?
I started, by the time the 90s hit, that's when, puberty started kicking in. I started giving a shit, about what my appearance looked like, So I would say that's when I would become more conscious of trends. So I don't, I guess.
I call myself a child of the 80s because that's the era I identify with. So it was Blackadder and the Young Ones. There was punk. There was New Romantic going on. That's where I discovered music, girls, all of that. So I call myself a child of the 80s.
Makes sense. But
I was born in the 70s.
Yeah.
Well, technically so was I, just at the very fucking end.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm old. I'm old. All right, people, we know this. The socks and sandals of the 80s, the leg warmers, the fingerless muffins.
Fingerless muffins? You Australians have some weird stuff going on.
Well, she eats them with a utensil. So Cintra does have fingerless muffins.
The fingerless gloves.
Cintra.
Fingerless
gloves. Cintra would eat a muffin fork and a knife.
It was like McDonough
You would eat a muffin with a fork and a knife, so technically they'd be fingerless muffins to you. You don't touch them.
That's true. That's true, because there is cutlery involved in all edible aspects of my life. I'm sorry. I just don't touch food. Oh, God. All right. I've enjoyed this episode, boys. This has been a
fun
one.
It's been good. It's been good.
Indeed. Indeed it has.
All right. And we will be back next week, people. We've got a nice author interview midweek. Make sure you tune in for that, bookers. Where do we find each other? Caleb, where are they?
Well, you know, you can always find a good old King of Schlock on Twitter. At BannonK1979, BannonK1979. I'm on Instagram, K_Banning_Callum. Come check me out over there. Tell me good things about myself. I don't even care if you mean it.
Just fake it. It's all good. David, they don't need to fake it, Caleb, because
I'm
you
just
are
giving them the option.
We love
just giving them the option. That's all.
No need to fake it with you. All right, David.
So I've been quiet for a little while, but I'm back on the Twitter at Kung Fu Ponder, or if you look on Instagram, you'll find dac.au, dac.au. You'll find some of my photos up there too.
Mm-hmm. On Instagram.
I didn't know you were made it on the gram.
No, because I tag, like, because I go tag Caleb in it when I put the book up there, but I can't find you. Go stalk me. Will you please find me so I can find you back? All right, bookers, come find me. Type in Cintra Sullivan. Anyway, I'm always around on all of the platforms. And my website, if I ever get the fucking thing sorted out, somebody come help me, please. There is one coming. Of course, What the Book podcast at What the Book at WTB podcast on Twitter. Come find us, talk to us. This is a writing community podcast about the writing community run by three of your most favorite people of the writing community.
Where scripts and pants are optional.
Scripts and pants are optional. I am doing neither at the moment. So, and it's called. And I'm in the office outside in the car. Woo! Hello, neighbors. All right. Okay, we're done. See you next week, boogers. Bye, Caleb. Bye, David.
It's been fun.